You're Smarter Than Us is a proud member of the Soccer and Sweet Tea Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Check out all of the coverage of Soccer in the Carolinas at soccer, sweettea.com. You're listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast, Asheville's premier soccer podcast.
Welcome back to Amateur Hour. We're joined by Stacy Enos, head coach of Asheville City, and Jennifer Cujo, player for the team. How are you guys doing?
Great. We're in paradise. Sunny day, no rain in the forecast, a chance to celebrate our community. A little fundraiser out there for JBL soccer fields. Life is good. Got a team.
Yeah, we're ready to rock it today, so.
And guys, Tim with the You're Smarter Than Us podcast is here too. So this is a little bit of a dual-branded podcast. Chris and I are going to chat for a bit with Jennifer and Stacy. We really could not have picked a better time of the year to talk to you guys, so thank you so much. Stacy, to kind of start with, we're going to go way, way, way back. 1985, Italy.
Yep.
U.S. Women's National Team's first game. How did that happen? How did you become connected? Was it just at Carolina? Was it, what was your history with that?
It was the sports festival. A long time ago, they used to have these little sports festivals that happened around the country. And the states were divided up into four sections. And so, we represented the South, and so we had our sports festival in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and it was a great opportunity. It wasn't just soccer, it was all sports. So after that match, after the whole tournament happened, we were pulled together. And in 1984, the U.S. had actually made a paper team. And then in 1985, after the sports festival, they sat us down and they read off this list and they said, you guys are on the U.S. women's national team. And we, honestly, I don't recall, there was rumors that this might actually take off into formalizing and playing in a match. So we all weren't holding our breath, but they said, hey, you get to go home for the weekend, and then you're flying to Long Island, and you're going to train, and then we're going to head out to Italy. So it was a scramble. Some people, my college roommate, Emily Pickering, we had to work on getting her passport expedited quickly through the soccer federation. I mean, it was mad. But yeah, so that was the start and the birth of it, and it was all eye-opening and all very new and wonderful and just kind of put us on the world stage, and that was the start of a long, great history.
And what did you see in the 14 years from that until Brandi Chastain's goal kick in Pasadena that led to that moment? What was, obviously there was a lot of fraught battles and disagreements with the Federation. I mean, there's still disagreements with the Federation. But what was the monumental shift to go from a paper team to Pasadena?
You know, it was, for me, it was interesting. So, you know, so this is mid-80s. So, you know, there really isn't the World Wide Web. There isn't cell phones. You couldn't pull up your phone and figure out where the hell you were going. And so when we got to Jesolo, which is a small Italian town on the Adriatic, when we took the stage, we were playing against China, Japan, Italy, Denmark, Germany, Sweden, Norway. I mean, I really personally had no idea all these other countries had such talented teams, and they played great soccer. So I think the U.S. made that leap into it, and I think where we ended up getting a little bit of a jump was Title IX in the game at the collegiate level. Definitely accelerated our growth, and you know, we didn't win a game in 1985. We tied a game, we lost a game, but we made our presence, and we became fan favorites, and it was really a unique experience. And then In 86, we went back and we played in the final. And we lost to Italy 2-1. It just sealed that moment. And so over the course of, you know, the next generation of the Mia Hamm, Christine Lilly, Foudy, all those folks coming into the national team, I think 99 was a galvanizing moment. I mean, it was just this phenomenal battle. The game was wonderful, 0-0, but everyone was riveted to their seat. Maximum capacity crowd, you know, I think it was the second highest attendance of any sports match ever. So that, you know, that kind of created this, you know, this platform for women's soccer. And so, obviously that match was that leap. To me, it's a little sad that it took 99 to now to where we finally have this Players Association and women are really kind of recognizing that they have to get organized. And you do. No matter how good you are, no matter how successful you are, you have to get organized and put yourself in that professional athlete model that the men have created.
I think there's a really beautiful kind of like snake eating its own tail where the 99 team, for the first time in the national team's history, the 99 team could have inspired the players that are now playing this year.
Oh, yeah.
And that's something that, you know, you could probably trace back in men's sport, but the U.S. women's national team's first World Cup, that inspiration, it's a direct line to what's going on now.
Oh, man. Yeah. I do not deny that. I believe that everyone became a fan that day.
Yeah.
And you're right. I mean, I know that the generation of today, they were little kids riveted and wanting to be on the pitch.
So with you transitioning from playing, you know, you were with the first team and now you've been coaching. You've been in this area for a while, correct?
Yes.
So what attracted you to this particular area and how have you, like, you know, grown the game on the coaching side of it?
So I went to college in Chapel Hill, mm-hmm. And then I used to come camping up here. And my college roommate, her brother, helped launch Barley's. Mm-hmm. And so we used to come up and camp and hang out and just enjoy the area. But when I was coaching Division I, you know, Asheville was always one of those little towns in the back of your head that was like, you know, that would be a cool place to live one day. And the opportunity came up for me to get some employment, and I was ready for kind of a leap of faith. And so I left coaching D1 and decided to make a transition to smaller college, but also just to kind of figure out where I wanted to be. So, you know, just to really kind of put my roots in a community. So Nashville spoke to me.
You're Smarter Than Us is brought to you in part by Tasty Beverage Company, a beer store and bar on Asheville's South Slope. In addition to featuring a world-class selection of local, regional, imported craft beer, Tasty also carries a selection of specialty beverages like natural wine, cider, and craft sodas. This year, Tasty will be showing Asheville City away games all season long, so go visit them at 162 Cox Avenue, across from Swannanoa Cleaners, and make sure to let them know we sent you. Jennifer, what is your history with the sport in Ghana?
So basically, Ghana is like one of the top African countries when it comes to sport. Like soccer is a big thing in Africa. So growing up, it's just like you choose either soccer or you go to school. So everybody's mind is like soccer, and it's a big thing. So growing up, that's the only sport that I kind of like put myself into playing growing up. Yeah, it's a really big game in Africa.
What is there, like in England or Europe, is there an academy system? Do you come up through public schools?
So we have public schools, and then we have club teams that they have like youth this from academy, but we don't play like American the way they have youth tournaments. You have to travel to different places. Mm-hmm. It's more about like the older people playing, so the younger ones get to like watch, train with them until you get to that stage, and then you play with the older people. But also, I was lucky, I was young, but I'll get a chance to play with the older group whilst my sister was playing the same. So I was lucky enough to get that IS experience, and then I think that set me up become who I am right now.
How does one, if I have this right, you played two U20 World Cups. How does one get identified to that level?
Okay, so Ghana? We have high school games, which is really competitive, which is the biggest thing that coaches look up into, and also the leagues, because some youth players are really good, so they push them high. So coaches kind of watch every game that they play. So if you're lucky, they see you, and then they pick you, they invite you to camp. If you make it, yeah. If you don't, sometimes coaches, like good coaches, reach out, and it's like, hey, I have this player. You can, you know, give them the opportunity. They come to camp. And so I was basically picked when I was playing for my high school team. And then I was like 14, 13. And then that was the first time I made it to the National U14 team. Wow. And then from there, it's just progressing. So I won. Yeah.
So with all that, what attracted you to come to America to play soccer here?
One thing is just like, the way soccer is brought here, combining it to school. I've always wanted to come to school here. Yeah.
The idea of getting an education.
Yeah. That's so growing up, and also I had this player, Alex Morgan, who inspired me so much. She's the player that I was looking up to when it comes to motivation and all that. So watching her going to, you know, UC Berkeley and all that is kind of inspired me, and I wanted to do that the same thing. That's the reason why I came here. I choose to come here and then play soccer and get education.
And I think I saw you played for a California team in WPSL. Did you go to school out in California as well?
No, I basically went to school in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. So my sister was playing in California with CC, Blandy Cheston, and all that.
Oh, wow.
So I was playing at a U20 World Cup in Japan. And then my sister talked to the coach, and then they watched me, and it was like, oh, I want her to come. So after the World Cup, I just flew back to California and then played with the team. And
you
then
say
the coach,
that so casually, like you drove down the street.
From Japan to California.
Yeah, so
no big deal.
I was lucky. Like California was a big, like it's a big club. Yeah. I got to play with CC from Brazil, the 1992 or 99 World Best Player. And I learned so much from her. And I played with Brandy Cheston and a lot of great players that they play for U.S. national team. It was really a great experience for me. I just enjoy every bit of it. So, yeah.
So then what attracted you to come to Asheville?
So I played three.
Pressure's on. Coach right here.
Stacey is pointing at herself.
So being a soccer player, when you play like 1, 2, 3 years, you wanted to learn different things, experience different things, and challenge yourself. So after I played 3 years with my team, we made it to top 16 WPSL 3 times, and then we didn't qualify. But I wanted to change something. I wanted to play with different people and in different groups. So I was looking to go to a team, and then I had a couple of teams in Florida, but I just wanted a place that I can feel like connected to. So when I reached out, I think I saw Lydia, and then I reached out to Lydia, and then she showed me about Asheville City. I saw the pictures and the fans, and it's just like, no, this is where I want to be. So all of a sudden I was like, yeah, I just love the fans, how everything was. And so, and then I reached out to Stacey, and then not knowing she knows my coach from college. So I think that made everything, you know.
So, Stacey, when I interviewed Megan over the summer, there was a lot of facial expressions that she made when we talked about different things that obviously didn't make the pod. One of them was the Asheville Splash.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about what the Asheville Splash is?
So it was it was the same, essentially the same as Asheville City. And Steve Woody ran it. It's a W team. We actually played the Charlotte Eagles. They were around back then too, and we had an amazing team. So it was same level, and we actually had tremendous success. So I arrived in town, and I was mid 30s I think, and Lydia was 15. And so we all got together, and we had these younger players. Same thing we're trying to do now. We're trying to make sure we have this building, these bridges and these stepping stones with like younger players and current players and ex-professionals, and And you know, Lydia came, you know, Lydia gives Asheville City huge kudos, or Asheville Splash, for kind of helping her cut her teeth and gain confidence. And then obviously Megan Burke, we picked up out of a Memphis team. She transferred over. And so it was great. You know, we would have 500 fans at the games. You know, the ABASA wasn't around. HFC was not under ABYSA. We hadn't formalized yet. Mm-hmm. So there's just a lot of newness to everything. We had parents that had grills, like the Corleys. You know, and people were out here with their grills flipping burgers.
The communalist.
It was awesome. And, you know, we all said, and many years, like, we just said, one day we're going to bring it back. And everyone, they all left and went away. And when they came back, then we ran into Ryan and Jimmy and Alan. You know, it's just, it was all meant to be. And they agreed that they... You know, we said, we want this platform, but it has to be here. And they said, okay. And next thing we know, we're putting on a great show.
So what was it? Did you feel like you needed the men to be the first through the door? The WPSL had obviously been around for a while. Was it just proof of concept when they started the NPSL side that, okay, Asheville is ready for this?
I think so, and I think we hadn't quite formalized our relationship. You know, I think they were just navigating the territory, and you know, for whatever reason, you know, I think I would pose that to the owners group. I think they did feel like the men were the best, you know, the best route to go initially, and then, you know, they're from Marion, even though it's just down the mountain. They had to kind of worm their way into everybody's hearts and, you know, make sure that we knew they were in it for the right reasons. And mm-hmm. And they're doing a wonderful job. Yeah, and they've become a big part of our community.
Just to take it back to Jennifer real quick, what do you think Asheville City has helped you with in taking your next step as in soccer, whether it's continuing to play or coach or whatever aspect that next bit may be?
I think when it comes to preparation-wise, getting to that next step and all that.
Guys, breaking news.
Here.
Brooke Bingham is back.
Let's go.
I haven't seen you in a long time.
How are you?
Brooke, how is your knee?
It's getting better. It's getting better.
Stay off Memorial's pitch then.
I was just walking on this. I was getting a little sore.
Welcome back, Brooke.
And I'm so glad
she's playing. She's playing. So, guys, watch her.
But go ahead, Jennifer.
So I think for Asheville City, I think one of the most important things that they've helped me to is like getting ready for the next chapter in my life, because it's like when it comes to training and, you know, opening those doors for me to meet so many people and learn how I'm gonna be when, you know, you go to that platform, like high level, seeing a lot of friends, how to treat people and all that. Mm-hmm. I think when it comes to that, they really kind of helped me and then opened my eyes to see how to, you know, respond to certain things. So I love, you know, the community and then everything this, you know, stand for.
So out of curiosity, do you see yourself, and this is a kind of a personal question, I guess, but do you see yourself coming alongside Asheville City to go pro later on, or be maybe more of a coach, or just curious?
Oh, okay, yeah. I see myself being a pro, because that's my biggest dream since I was a kid. I always have. And I know sometimes it's just, you gotta wait for a while. Yep. And I've got so many chances, opportunity, and then, you know, contract, but I'm just looking for the one that I think it fit me at the moment. I don't want to make any rational decision right now. So my next step right now is to taking care of things and making sure that my next step is like 100% I'm sure of what I'm taking. So my next step is to be a professional player, and after that I will look into coaching. I love coaching the kids and all that, but not like now it's like gonna be my, you know, focus. So
Stacy, what is the path at the moment with only 9 professional teams? What are the non-traditional, what does a woman have to do that a man probably doesn't have to do with the multiple USL, you know, USL League One? I mean, there's so many different tiers, whereas we're sitting in a top 10 market in America, and unfortunately, you know, for all the different reasons we can't pay our players. What does a woman have to do now to crack that league?
Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I think this is also a good question for Megan Burt, because she works and sits on a mm-hmm. lot of the Players Association, and she's drafting a lot of, you know, some legal documents and mm-hmm. just kind of visionary doc, you know, just the big vision. But so in the U.S., obviously we have, you know, our pro league, and then we have, you know, this offshoot of, you know, the second tier, which is what we are in. Overseas, they also have good pro leagues and good teams. Often players, if they don't make it in one of our top nine teams, they go abroad and they play. And some are choosing. I mean, they're you know, I mean, look at what, you know, Man City's doing and Lyon.
It's incredible.
It's phenomenal. I mean, they're packing 80. They had 80,000 fans in a stadium. So, I mean, we, you know, I think we're here. I really feel like we've got to continue to identify markets that we can expand our league. You know, we need more teams. We need the U.S. to really kind of put a foothold and help these programs expand and get up.
Who's, without putting you in a bad spot, whose responsibility is that? Is that the Federation's responsibility? Is that the league's responsibility? Or is that, in kind of the ultimate democracy, each club's responsibility?
You know, I think there is a collective collaboration where everybody should have some foothold in it. You know, obviously the investor, you got to get investors on board. It's expensive, you know, to run a team in a league at that level. But I do believe that there are folks out there who love the game and can treat it. You know, we treat this as a business model. We love the game, and we treat it as a business. And so I do think U.S. soccer needs to really start putting some messaging out there that will help the women's game to flourish and grow, and put some things in front of owners' groups and cities that will help these clubs, franchises come to an existence. Yeah.
Can't think of any other good questions. You pretty much asked everything I wanted to ask.
Well, Jennifer, I know you need to go warm up. Stacy, I know you've got some returning faces that you want to go
yes.
say hello to. Thank you so much for your
Thanks
time.
Thank you all.
We really appreciate
Anytime.
It.
Thank you for having me.
Yep.
Awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank
all
right, you guys.
Everyone.
Thanks.
Been listening to the You're Smarter Than Us podcast. Shoot us an email at youresmarterthanus@gmail.com or find us on Twitter @YOURE_smarter.